Lowe's knows how to help you save this 4th of July. Upgrade your laundry routine with the new and exclusive first-of-its-kind all-in-one vented laundry combo. Wash and dry in just 68 minutes. Save up to 40% on select major appliances. Plus, when you buy more, you save more. Shop Samsung this July 4th at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning.
There's this weird thing that happens when you look at something close enough and actually focus in on it for once, and then you realize that things are different than you thought they were because you finally paid attention to that thing. Or maybe things aren't different, but all of a sudden you have a question, all of a sudden your attention is focused in on it. So your perception of that thing changes because you actually noticed it. I mean, this can happen in our day-to-day life. How many times have you opened a door before you realized, oh wow, the wood around the doorknob is kind of dirty because that's where everyone's hands touch, but it's been like that for months because you just hadn't noticed? Or when you look at a word, this happens to me all the time, you're like, wait, that's how that word is spelled? And then you look at it, and you look at it, and you look at it, and eventually it just looks even more strange because you've been looking at it. That happens. This is going somewhere, by the way. Another similar kind of thing that can happen is that you are introduced to a thing, a concept, an idea, whatever, at a young age. And so you don't question it. You just go, oh, well, that's just a thing, I guess. And then you accept it. What am I talking about here? I'm talking about the idea of sending barrels down a river, unescorted, just floating along by themselves. And those barrels contain goods and expensive wine and things that you wouldn't want to get lost or busted open along the journey, and yet they're just happy to let the barrels float down the river, at least for a significant portion of that journey. Doesn't that sound odd? has anyone else realized that that seems like a kind of a silly idea? And I get it. I get that the benefit of this is that you don't have to shepherd them along yourself, that the river will just bring them from one place to another, that you can build the barrels in a way where they're not going to break open. They're very sturdy. They're very water resistant. All of that. I totally get it. It saves a lot of effort with having to haul these things over land or to put them all on a barge in order to get down the river and have somebody have to actually load them onto a raft or a barge and then pilot the raft. I get it. It's efficient. It makes things easier. The thing that struck out to me as I was working on this episode was that outside of The Hobbit, this isn't something that I was particularly aware or familiar with. Was this something that Tolkien just kind of invented? Was it something that the elves did? Because the elves are a little bit odd and different from regular people in Middle Earth. Or was this actually something that is known, the world knows about? Now, I've clearly seen scenes in movies where they are taking lumber and they're putting the broken down parts of trees and you know, like the big logs in the water, and then the water just kind of brings them where they're going to go for the most part. Sometimes they get jammed up and they got to push them through. But I've seen where that happens. But logs are not barrels. They're not carrying other things. And barrels, I mean, who's going to steal a log along the way? But somebody who sees a bunch of barrels floating across the river might come up with a way to, I don't know, run a net across the river and then catch a bunch of the barrels and they'd be off with some goods. So it does seem a little bit odd, just like the intro to this episode, by the way, which has gone on longer than I anticipated. But we'll get to the story and what's going on in a minute. But I just wanted to let you know, before we get to that moment in the story, that that is actually a very real thing, and there is some history around it. And this has been my experience going back through The Hobbit of just, wow, I didn't even question that as a child. And it's one of those things that even watching the movies or rereading the book later, and I'm just like, okay, yeah, that's what they do. But looking at it under this lens, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Is this really a thing? Well, turns out it is. Also, Bilbo needs to get out of there. He's in danger. So let's talk about it. It was just at this moment when Bilbo suddenly discovered the weak point in his plan. Most likely you saw it some time ago and have been laughing at him, but I don't suppose you would have done half as well yourselves in his place. Now, of course, he's in a situation where he has been the one loading all the other dwarves and everybody else into their barrels and has not figured out a plan for himself, which makes sense. How do you close a barrel in from the inside? That seems very difficult unless you had a specifically designed lid with some sort of latch or something that you could do from the inside. But he doesn't have that. And that should be terrifying because he would be left behind having to haunt these halls until he can find another way out for himself, which the narrator points out. It says here, getting utterly left behind and have to stay lurking as a permanent burglar in the elf caves forever. And there's a tinge of humor, I think, on some of these phrases. Also, in this section, not only do we get these little points of, hey, this seems kind of funny, we're making, yes, it seems terrible, but it also seems a little humorous. We have some really interesting descriptions that Tolkien uses for some stuff, and I'm going to point that out as we go. So Bilbo kind of thinks ahead about what the chances are of even finding the dwarves again, even if he could get back out through the front gate, and then he starts to worry more about the dwarves than he does about himself. He wondered what on earth would happen to them without him, because he didn't have time to tell them everything he learned. There was so much more that he needed to do to help them along their way. Notice how dedicated he is to this group at this point. There's a psychological phenomenon where if you want somebody to like you more, ask them to do you a favor. I don't know if you've heard of this before, but it's true. People are more likely to think positively of people that they've gone out of their way to do things for, because there's some sort of mental justification for, well, I must have liked them enough to have done that thing. And it seems like this is maybe where Bilbo is with this. He's been helping the dwarves along so much at this point that he's invested so much in them that he's continuing to do so. He's also just a good person. He cares about what's going on and making sure that they get where they're going and that they are able to take on this dragon and everything else going on in the future. And he doesn't want to let them down. So I think there's maybe two aspects that are kind of happening there. So the elves are going to haul up the portcullis. They're pulling the ropes to pull up the gate to allow the barrels to float away. And they have this wonderful song. And of course, with all of these songs, you can clearly tell that this was not something they just made up in the spur of the moment, like it was a musical and all of a sudden everybody knows all the lyrics. Although it does kind of feel like that. But in this situation, this could be something that they sing every time they open up the portcullis. It also does a little bit more than just describe what's going on with the barrels. There's a feeling that this is, in some ways, a reference to the dwarves. Here, let's go through it. Down the swift, dark stream you go, back to lands you once did know. Dwarves are going back to Erebor, right? Leave the halls and caverns deep, leave the northern mountains steep, where the forest wide and dim stoops in shadow gray and grim. This part is interesting because it talks about the halls and caverns, and then it goes and talks about the northern mountains. They're not in the northern mountains. They're in like a hilly section of the forest, but these wouldn't be described as mountains. The stream, however, does come down from the northern mountains, so that seems to be the reference there. Also, some of their dwarven kin live in the Grey Mountains in the north, and although that's not where this group came from, there are dwarves up there. Float beyond the world of trees, out into the whispering breeze, past the rushes, past the reeds, past the marshes, waving weeds, through the mist that riseth white, up from mere and pool at night. Follow, follow star that leap, up the heavens cold and steep. Turn when dawn comes over land, over rapid, over sand. South away and south away, seek the sunlight and the day. Notice it's charting out the journey of the stream, but also they're about to go through this themselves. Back to pasture, back to mead, where the kine and oxen feed. Back to gardens on the hill, where the berry swells and fills. Under sunlight, under day, south away and south away, down the swift dark stream you go, back to lands you once did know. Now, the barrels go back and forth because they're bringing goods back and forth, but notice that there's also other symbolism as well. The river moves from a world of trees, a dark, dimly lit forest with concepts of pools at night and stars that leap. The stars are associated with elves. The sun is more associated with humans, with mankind. And that's where they're going. They're going from a realm of the elves in this gray and grim and dark, almost night-like forest environment to a place that is open and sunlit in the south, where the berries swell and fill, where they make the wine. They're going from a land of elves to a land of men, a land of night to a land of day. And that's exactly where the dwarves are going as well. They've had to deal with the land of the elves, and now they're about to have to deal with the land of humans. And that works very differently. So the barrels are on their way, and Bilbo needs to do something. And so he basically jumps down, grabs the edge of a barrel, and we get this wonderful description. This is a very vivid, detailed explanation of what Bilbo is actually going through, to the point where I'm pretty sure you can identify with this. Anybody who's spent some time in a pool or in the ocean holding onto a raft and then slipping over the side of the raft and holding on but being underneath it, or being in a situation where you are either in extremely cold water or have been submerged in cool water long enough for your body heat to go away. This is a traumatic kind of thing to have to deal with. Here, I'm going to just point out some of the details as we go through this. He's described as like a rat, but for all his effort, he could not scramble on top of the barrel. Every time he tried, the barrel rolled round and ducked him under again. Then suddenly the trap doors fell with a boom and their voices faded away. He was in the dark tunnel floating in icy water all alone. Alone again. Notice this. He keeps ending up alone. Then he heard a creak of the water gate being hauled up. The sounds, the details, all very, very vividly describe the situation he's in. Then at the end of that section, we get this. Then he saw that it would have been no good, even if he had managed to get astride his barrel, for there was no room to spare, not even for a hobbit, between its top and the sudden stooping roof where the gate was. I don't know about you, but I get a very vivid picture of him trying to get on top of this barrel and then realizing that even if he could, he wouldn't fit underneath the roof where the gate goes. He couldn't have gotten out. And so the barrels do get out, and they get to the point where they're going underneath the branches of trees, and Bilbo is still wondering, even in this situation where he is miserable, having to just kind of hold on for his life and not drown and not freeze, he's thinking about the dwarves. I do hope I put the lids on tight enough, he thought, but before long, he was worried too much about himself to remember the dwarves. Even early on, he was still thinking about the dwarves until eventually he became, well, overwhelmed with the situation. He was shivering with the cold, and he wondered if he would die of it before the luck turned. Notice how many times luck comes up. This is another moment. This isn't the last one. And how much longer he would be able to hang on, and whether he should risk the chance of letting go and trying to swim to the bank. But the luck turned, all right, before long. The luck always turns, like there's some invisible hand guiding the situation. Just when he felt like he couldn't take it any longer, the barrel gets kind of stuck on this root on the side of the stream, and then he's able to climb up on top, and he can kind of lay out there, spread himself out, warm up a little bit. But he was still worried it might just roll over and he'll just fall back in again. Luckily, it didn't. He was able to stay on top. Luckily, it says here, he was very light, and the barrel was a big one, and being rather leaky, had now shipped a small amount of water. So it had just enough inside it to kind of keep it on one side, and then he didn't fall off. All the same, it was like trying to ride without bridle or stirrups, a round-bellied pony that was always thinking of rolling on the grass. Another little humorous moment there. And then we get the descriptions of where they are now. The trees on either hand grew thinner. There was a paler sky between them that you could see. There was a dim sheet of water no longer overshadowed. And on its sliding surface, there were dancing and broken reflections of clouds and of stars. So at night, the barrels end up against the shore and kind of this part of a pier, and they all stop. They all naturally make it to this place, and then they kind of just stop right there. It seems like a natural place where they would all collect, which means somebody needs to come and do something with them, either take them where they're going over land or continue them down the river somehow. And that's exactly what happens. There are people who live right off the side of the river in this location, and some of them, that's their job, is to keep the product moving. And Bilbo thinks about the dwarves, how terrible the situation they are in is. But he remembers that he's invisible and he can just slip off, go off the barrel and go find whatever he needs. And by this point, he's hungry. And so he sneaks around town, finds some supper. And it says he no longer thought twice about picking up a supper uninvited if he got the chance. And we get this justification here that he was so hungry that it didn't feel like stealing at this point. It just felt like survival. We're also told that he caught a glimpse of a fire through the trees, and that appealed to him as his clothes were drippy and wet. And this actually causes a problem in a moment. But before that, we get this line, this kind of jump sections, and we get this skip ahead moment, which Tolkien does every so often. There was no need to tell you much of his adventures that night. For now, we are drawing near to the end of the eastward journey and coming to the last and greatest adventure. So we must hurry on. This is funny that he just kind of notes it here. He's like, hey, we've got other stuff to talk about, so I'm not going to drag this on too long. But then he immediately explains that, well, he was invisible because of his magic ring, but everywhere he went, he left drips around, and so that became suspicious. And even worse was the fact that he was cold, and so he would sneeze, and that would give away his position. So he needed to take what he could find and then leave. And we get this almost uncharacteristic quality, or at least a thing that Bilbo does in this moment. Bilbo escaped into the woods carrying a loaf and a leather bottle of wine and a pie that did not belong to him. Now, burglaring and taking things from elves is something he's been doing for weeks at this point. So that's not weird. It's also kind of funny that he makes a point to, well, he grabs like a loaf of bread. Okay, so he's hungry. That makes sense. He grabs some wine, which is probably one of the things that's safer to drink, especially in this kind of world where the wine would be watered down a lot, but wouldn't have anything, you know, terrible in it. Like maybe if you just drank the river water, it probably wasn't so good or clean, potentially. I mean, where do you think the elves' waste comes from? Like, where do they put their waste in the underground kingdom in the forest? Probably goes in the river, right? So having a bottle of wine makes sense. And then the pie is funny because, well, he's a hobbit and he loves his pies. So the items that he takes, not necessarily the weird part, but the fact that he allows himself to drink the bottle of wine and fall asleep. Remember, this wine makes you sleepy. And he knows what the elves did when they drank the wine. They fell asleep. They became unaware, which allowed him to get away with the stuff that he was trying to do. But he's also exhausted. He's going to fall asleep. And this seems dangerous because he's not with the barrels, but he can't stay with the barrels because he might get found out. So he has to go somewhere away from them. And yet, luckily, dozes off and gets some sleep and wakes up just in time to get back to the barrels. How does he wake up? With a sneeze. That's right. Not by the sun coming up over the horizon because it's overcast. And that allows him to sneak back over to the barrels without giving away a weird wobbly shadow. And so this all seems to work out for him, luckily, even though he's so exhausted that he can't take the best precautions in order to make sure that he can stay with the barrels. It still just works out. Now, I mentioned in the intro that sending these barrels down a river is actually something that there's evidence for, and it's something that people probably still do in some locations. So, for example, the Rhine River in Germany, and during the medieval and early modern periods, the Rhine was a major corridor for shipping wine from vineyards to cities like Cologne. This is a exact replica of, well, maybe not exact. I mean, you don't have elven cities and forests, but the idea of manufacturing wine, putting that in barrels, sending it down a river to get to a major city that people would then use is very similar. Very, very similar. Now, they're going the opposite direction in this river where they're going back to the vineyards, but it's same kind of concept, right? They had specialized crane systems. They were called wine cranes. And this is at places like, I'm going to mess up the names, but Ostrich Winkle, built around 1744 to 1745, that loaded barrels under river barges and shipped over like 500,000 liters of wine annually. This is in the history of the city. And if you look at like livingtours.com, you can find more details about this, or winesofgermany.com. And this is just going back to the crane from the mid 1700s. they've been shipping wine like this way before that, and way before they had these more modern crane systems to do so. Barrels were rolled or crane lifted onto workboats or rafts, often traveling downstream unattended until collected by merchants in Cologne. Cologne trade protocols involved stapling and inspecting incoming barrels, suggesting the typical barrel by barrel arrival process. This also happens in other locations like Douro, D-O-U-R-O River in Portugal. I probably messed that up. From the 13th century, barrels of port wine were moved from vineyards to Porto via the fast flowing Douro River. This is there's a detail about this on Wikipedia you can read if you want to just look that up. Barcos Rabolos flat bottom boats were specifically developed for this. In particular, they carried 40 to 100 barrels and required expert crews to navigate down the rapids. So in that case, they put them on the rafts because they were going down rapids and the rafts protected the barrels. But in this case, they don't need to do that because they're not going down rapids. Now, doing this is very common, or at least was, until about the mid-1960s, where it became less common. But even during those time periods, it says here, crews often floated barrels downstream unsupervised. River current and local retrieval crews did the work. So you just put them in the river on one end, they float until they get to a place where somebody catches them, just like what happens in the story, and then they move on. So what Tolkien modeled here in The Hobbit is exactly modeled in historical locations in the world. And I would have to imagine that he knew that, or that it was so common at some point in history for something like this to happen that it didn't need to be explained. It was just, well, this is what the elves do to move the wine barrels and supplies. And so that's just how it is. And like young me, I'm sure most people just accepted that as truth. And interestingly enough, it's factually accurate. This can work this way, which is really cool because that ties into exactly how the dwarves and Bilbo are able to escape is through a common method of transporting barrels in and out of a place like where they were at. Now, I don't know of very many places that are underground and have access to the underground river part of it, but the idea that just, you know, a river is running nearby and you could put things in it and they travel down the river totally makes sense. And the fact that they do that with barrels historically totally makes sense. So there you go. Kind of wrap it up in this episode. Well, we get to the end of the chapter and we end up at another one of those situations where it seems like things might be dangerous for the dwarves. We haven't heard from them. They've been very quiet and very patient, I'm sure, for dwarves being stuck in barrels for a very, very long period of time. But now that they are back to other elves who are managing the barrels and having to deal with them, there's danger here. What if the elves open them up? What if they become suspicious? What if they're too heavy? What if one of the dwarves makes a noise or sneezes like Bilbo has been doing? But yet none of that happens. Instead, we get this. "This is a heavy load," some grumbled. "They float too deep. Some of these are never empty. If they had come ashore in the daylight, we might have had a look inside," they said. "No time now," cried the raftman. "Shove off." And off they went at last, slowly at first, until they had passed the point of rock where other elves stood to fend them off with poles. And then quicker and quicker as they caught the main stream and went sailing away down, down towards the lake. They had escaped the dungeons of the king and were through the wood, but whether alive or dead still remains to be seen.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylow's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only 6/19 through 6/25. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
All right, we're back from the mid-break. Well, it's end break. I always call it a mid-break, but I've been putting it closer to the end now. But you guys know how this works. Hey, big reminder, I'm going to GCX in Orlando, Florida, on July 25th and 26th. It's going to be a blast. There will be a lot of different cool stuff, video games and all sorts of voice actors, devs, fans, people dressing up as different characters. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some Lord of the Rings stuff, although the focus is a little bit more on things like Fallout and Elder Scrolls and a bunch of other game stuff. Basically, if there's games, then there might be stuff here about those games. It's pretty broad. So that's coming up. I'm going to be hanging out most likely on the 25th. Might be there for 2 days. We'll see how things shake out. But I'm going to be hanging out. I'm going to be recording, meeting some people, maybe doing some interviews, maybe doing an episode of something while I'm there. Haven't really fleshed it out yet. But if you'd like to come and be part of it, then there is a link. Or just go gcxevent.com online. Just go look up the website. It's a great opportunity to take a kind of a summer vacation in Orlando, because you can go to the parks, you can hang out, you can be part of this. And we're going to be setting some stuff up on the Discord in order to coordinate where things will be going on. Maybe if we're grabbing lunch or dinner somewhere, we have a group that's just kind of hanging out. That stuff will be online for everybody to find out. So go check that out. There's a link in the description of the show if you want to just find the link. If you can't remember, gcxevent.com. But if you can, you can type that in. Come join me. Also, thank you so much for our newest supporters. We have two new all-access patrons, Freckles and Chelsea W. Welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you decided to join. I hope you're enjoying the bonus episodes you get every week, plus all the other stuff, ad-free episodes. There's all sorts of fun things, t-shirts and stickers. You guys know how this works. And then I have to shout out our VIP patrons. Let's see if I can get through this whole list. We've got AK Music Lover, Eldarian Was Right, Apollo, Averial, Azzle Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Captain Legolas Turner, Cutter, Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Fulcrum, Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Ginger Fury, Who On Is My Hero, Jezzer, KDS, Capenna, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Matt, Party Snacks, Philip M, Richard J, Rosie Rose, Single Ent Looking for Entwives, The Bestest Boy, TJT, and Tour Son of Hoor. Thank you so much to all of you and to everybody who joins me and helps support things on Patreon. All of you, you guys are the best. Also, I'd love to read out a brand new review on Apple Podcasts, but we don't have a new one, at least not this week in the US. So head over there. Even if you just have an Apple account and you don't listen to the show on that platform, you can leave a review over there. That would be wonderful. Heck, you could even comment on the Spotify episodes and say nice things over there. That would be wonderful as well. Every time somebody says something nice, a fairy gets its wings. It makes my day. It genuinely makes my day. So thank you so much for your support. Plus, you can share with your friends and all of that. This feels like a slightly shorter episode, even though I went on this weird trail of talking about barrels going down rivers. But I guess it's just a little bit shorter this week. There you go. Sometimes that happens. We're just wrapping up the episode. We're moving on to chapter 10. We're getting through this book. We're going to get there. It's just, you know, piece by piece, and I don't want to miss anything. I just go through every little line with a comb in order to see, is there anything juicy, anything worth pointing out? And if ever I miss anything, please let me know. Please, absolutely comment on, especially if you're a patron. Last week's bonus episode was all because of a comment somebody posted and got me thinking, and I wanted to answer and kind of explain it in whatever detail I could. Very cool stuff going on over there. So thank you to everyone who supports the show and for being a part of this and keeping it going. All right, I'll stop yammering your ear off. Have a wonderful rest of your day. And until next time, if you find yourself in a situation where you need to put a bunch of dwarves in barrels, then make sure to bring some scuba gear so you don't get as cold, but you can also breathe underwater. I don't know. That's probably not good advice. All right, thanks for being here. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.